probably a lot of you can't see this very well, but I just wanted to emphasize that this demonstrates that this continent was Indian territory. Here is the present Bureau of Indian Affairs map. The yellow territories on this map are federally recognized reservations. That's all we've got left, and that's what we're trying to hang on to.
And most of that is leased.
What do you see as a solution to this problem with the Indian Bureau of Indian Affairs? Do you see another kind of organization in a government from your experience?
Services. There are obligations on the part of the federal government that should be fulfilled, but not with paternalism, hopefully. There is a President Nixon enunciated some very good policy, which wasn't carried out. If some of that were implemented, and some laws that may come out of this American Indian Policy Review Commission would give some hope, but I agree with Betty Mealy that it's in the wrong bailiwick at the moment, along with national parks and Bureau of Land Management and other people who are competing with Indians. There's a conflict of interest there as to when they defend Indians and when they defend their other clientele. But to abolish the Bureau of Indian Affairs without substituting something to fulfill federal obligations would be a great mistake, I think.
Would you agree that with Mrs. Mealy, that it would be a good idea to have as a cabinet policy,
yes, I do,
specific executive branch of the government?
Yes, I do.
You can give an example of the problem in the Interior Department. If an Indian tribe, and this happens all the time, an Indian tribe has a problem with Corps of Engineers because they built the dam. They're always building the dams, they're always bringing up the wrong. And one of
too late and too expensive for the purpose that they were intended.
The Solicitor General of the Department of Interior defends the Corps of Engineers because they are the Department of Interior and they're paid and it's part of the job. On the other hand, they are also the trustees of the Indian reservations. However, they usually choose to defend the Corps of Trustees, and they claim a conflict of interest. Conflict of interest, we can defend the reservation at the same time defend the Corps of Engineers.
Both the same department.
Yes, the same department.
But
Senator Kennedy has tried to introduce legislation with having success to change that situation.
But even when there isn't a conflict of interest, such as protecting the water rights of the Indians of New Mexico or the United Pueblo tribes, the Department of Interior hires a lawyer from the Justice Department, and that lawyer prepares the case so badly that the Indians are guaranteed to lose.
Yes, John.
Yes, and a case in point would be that at the Grand Canyon, when the Havasupai had been using land at the higher level for many years, but more recently under the control of the Park Service, who prohibited them from building any structures there or building any water supply tanks or in other ways taking care of their herds, so that they couldn't use that land. But very recently, that has been given to the Havasupai for their use and taken away from the Park Service, which was, I don't know how it ever happened. But there are plenty of other instances where the National Park Service has taken Indian land for the benefit of all the rest of us, but simply stole it from the Indians. Well, at the moment in Alaska now, for instance, the Department of the Interior has lots of subordinate parts, and the National Park Service and the Recreation and Wild Rivers and Fish and Game, and I forget what all else, but there are quite a few categories there which are taking huge areas of land all over Alaska. Now, the law provides for it. It's not illegal. But on the other hand, here are the native people who owned certainly 95% of Alaska. The Russians may have had 5% at the most, which they then sold to the United States. So the United States didn't buy the title to acreage, they bought sovereignty. The population has increased so that the natives are now only 20% of the population. And in our magnanimity, we let them keep 10% of the land. And all the rest of it belongs to white people and the federal government. And a lot of that is not being returned to the natives, but is going to be set apart for recreation, for wild rivers, for maybe good conservation causes. But still, it's by all morality, I would say it's native land. Well, you ought to at least deal with the other party. You ought to deal with the Indians and find out what you can agree upon. I wouldn't say that I know what the answer is, but if we decide what we're going to do to them without asking them, I think something's wrong.
Any other questions?
There's been a question back in here for a long time.
Is that here?
I think that what's going on now is people are telling you that you don't know about your government and that you don't know what your government's doing. You don't have any idea what your taxes are being spent for. You don't have a hold on the laws that run this land. You don't know about what's happening in the departments. You know, this is not solely the responsibility of just people that are in trouble. They're in trouble because all of you don't know, and all of you don't know what's happening with the federal government. Got to be aware of the departments, what the secretaries do. You know, the government is huge. It's a large kind of conglomeration. And as the Indian has suffered under the paternalistic guise of a government that serves the protection of Native Americans, so in fact are you going to suffer that end because you do not know what your organizations are doing. You don't know what your federal rules and regulations are. Right? You don't know the implementation process of the federal government. And what we're saying here is there's a great deal that you don't know. And you indeed will suffer the consequences of not having that knowledge and not knowing what your money is being spent for. And I think that this problem that, you know, we speak of as Native American problem is indeed your problem. If it's not your problem today, it's going to be your problem tomorrow. You know, if it's not in the Department of Interior, it's going to be in another department. It's going to be in the urban area of Philadelphia. It's going to be in the suburban area somewhere. What we're saying is knowledge is something which you can develop. Knowledge about what's going on in the federal government. Knowledge about what happens. Without that knowledge base, without you doing something, indeed without you searching the rules that have guided Indian reservations down to disaster, we need the protection of a population that's educated. We need the protection of people like you who know what's happening, who are well aware of the problems faced because of the federal government, you know, who are well aware of the diametrically opposed opposition and interaction of federal programs, you know, spending your money. And do very little. You know, we need the kind of people that are willing to take the opportunity to know about their government, to search about the answers. You know, we need a more educated public.
Let me seize the opportunity to present this to this excellent audience that the Indian Rights Association publishes Indian Truth, which attempts to bring this kind of information to your attention. We'd welcome your membership. And you may help yourself to these.
I just wanted to say, comment, those of you who were here a couple of weeks ago, right here. Go ahead. I didn't see that. That's such a dull color to your skin. I didn't see it.
Even if you're of the Union Affairs taken out of the
we have all the qualified people necessary to run our affairs. But they are not the people who get appointed by the government. The commissioner of the Bureau of Indian Affairs is appointed.
Okay, that's one appointee. Gotcha. But then from that point, shouldn't you be running lawsuits for discrimination jobs? I got you the women are with women. And in Philadelphia,
well, even women later, yeah.
But it seems to me that that's, you know, when you have these government powers that they say that it's good, then they're held over you, so incredible. It seems to me that you've got to get those jobs.
The job doesn't mean much if you get it in the Bureau of Indian Affairs because the structure is there and you just can't deal with it. Any man who takes that job is rendered powerless by the very structure of the Bureau. The paperwork.
You have to recognize
that paperwork.
You have to recognize that the Bureau of Indian Affairs is a structure of Congress, answerable to Congress. It's not created by Indians. It isn't answerable to Indians. If you can change the governmental structure, well, you may be able to get responsibility to Indians, but that is not the way it is now.
I realize that. That's why I'm thinking.
Are you getting at the point of view that if you really had all Native Americans organized into political force somehow, you could kind of create a force in the government outside the Indian Bureau? We understand that, but coming back to the idea of having a cabinet appointment, this would mean a great deal of political pressure from Native Americans as a whole to get that kind of governmental influence, wouldn't it? That means a lot of organization on your part.
We don't have any power as a minority. There are, about a million, Denny, Native Americans?
You have the power of truth.
Estimated census? Yes, the power of truth. But we certainly need, as Denny said before, the support of the non-Indian community in any revisions, reforms that we want to make concerning our control, our self-determination, our control of our future.
You know, the American Bar Association, 5 weeks Saturday, have reversed their position and have supported proposition that the federal government approve the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights, which they've disapproved every year since there's been an attempt to have it approved. And that is, I think, a very, very important decision because they now have the ability to lobby the Congress, and hopefully the Congress will pass that United Nations Declaration of Human Rights, which they haven't passed. And I think that in itself is something which I think will stir a lot of people to a different posture of Native Americans because it opens the door now to an international audience, you know, a multi-faceted approach to human rights from Native Americans and expansion of diplomatic relations with other human rights organizations, the High Commission of Human Rights in Europe, and other organizations in Brussels and Paris, which have sophisticated their attempt to implement human rights ideas around the world, are now open to Native Americans by law, because if the Congress does pass this UN Declaration of Human Rights, that opens up challenges from people within the United States to the International Court, which in fact has had very little success in terms of its ability to enforce the ideas that it perceives to be important, but has a worldwide audience. And immediately upon entering the Hague, you know, the ideas that are perceived by that court, or ideas which are advertised by all human rights organizations, and it becomes another approach to attempting to show the world that within the United States there are some grievous wrongdoings going on. I hope that in itself will be something which will be very important, and that I think the Native Americans themselves as countries are going to begin working on achieving diplomatic relations with each other. I mean, for instance, one tribe in the United States recognizing another tribe in Canada, or some of the tribes in South America recognizing tribes in the United States. You know, there's got to be some attempt by us to expand our areas of interacting with each other. The idea of the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the Department of Interior and congressional policy are are vital to our existence, and vital to our existence as well as the education of ourselves at the global level, so that we can survive in order to pursue and support the kinds of national and international changes that is needed.
Well, we have one more question. That's from you, then we have to, I guess, close it up. How about that?
Could anyone comment on Indian anthropologists' relationships for anthropologists seen as potential?
Read Vindaloria.
I think you may have opened up a real argument here in the last minute. Who do we answer
that? Hour, you get another hour.
How about you first? Can you answer that one? What's the one?
Well, it's been my experience that a number of anthropologists hope that we assimilate and acculturate as fast as possible so they can be the last ones to have done the last definitive study of our culture.
No successors.
But I do think there is a new breed of anthropologists today.
There's what?
More conscious, who has more social consciousness and awareness and more interest in protecting Indian interests. There are a few of them around.
I think these young students that are in anthropology classes are going to put the pressure on
it's been helpful.
The Renaissance period of the 60s, I think, has changed the attitude of a lot of students.
Why don't we hear? Do you have a question? Comment?
I don't think textbooks are very modern. They seem to keep using the same ones with the same sort of stereotyping. Occasionally, I have heard of revisions in textbooks, but the information on American history as related to the Native American is just very skimpy, and it's unfortunate because it's not only a disservice to Indian children, it's a disservice to all children. I'm not aware of any major undertakings at this particular time. We do, after the first convocation of American Indian Scholars at Princeton, New Jersey in 1970, the National Indian Education Association was formed. The National Indian Education Association provides all sorts of reference material, bibliographies, lists of films, and so forth, for any school teacher to avail herself of in order to improve source material on Native Americans in your local school system. Would you like to?
I find that I'll get scolded if I don't stop this pretty soon. But go ahead, you have one more comment here.
Yes, that's true, and a lot of it is junk. This is just another way of exploiting the American Indian. A lot of these new books coming out are just sort of paste and scissors jobs and reissuing somebody else's original research and a collection of material and just repeated and repeated and repeated. And a lot of it continues to romanticize us and put us back in the attics and the warehouses of archaeology and anthropology. And it's not really current.
A lot of it is good and current also.
There isn't much.
Well, for instance, contemporary
yes, but that's, there are only a handful among all the books being issued today.
Well, I certainly want to thank our panel of discussants today, and I have a feeling that one thing that comes out of this very clearly is that you all feel there's a tremendous amount of ignorance about the Native Americans. And it's terribly important to you that there shouldn't be this ignorance about what's happening and what has happened and what's going on at the present time. And I think it's terribly important, and it reminds me of what John Woodhoff said the other day. He said, he finished up by saying, today it may be you and tomorrow us, so that we have a great deal to learn from you, about you and from you as to what's happening. And I think it's terribly important that this, we should know more about this. I think that really has come out. Afternoon, and I'm very grateful to all of you. Thank you.